Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf 28, three main topics, all different cases of hearing a shofar in an unusual way. The first one is about partial hearing of the shofar. The second one is if you hear, use a shofar of a sacrificial animal, which you're not allowed to use, or of Avodah Zarah. We're going to see an important principle here that mitzvot are not there for physical benefit. Mitzvot lav lehanot nitenu, and some discussion on that. And then the longest discussion of the daf is Rava's statement that mitzvot do not require intention. If you happen to do a mitzvah, not even realizing that you are doing a mitzvah, nevertheless, one has fulfilled his obligation, according to Rava, and we'll see various examples and discussion of that. And so we begin right at the top. Amar Rabba, Shama miksat tikia babor, miksat tikia asifat bor yasa. We mentioned in the Mishnah that if one blows a shofar into a pit or a cistern, it's not good if you're only hearing the echo, but it's okay if you're in, if you're with the shofar blower and you're hearing the actual sound, it's okay. So now he's wondering, what if you hear part of the sound of the shofar inside the pit with the shofar blower, and then you leave in the middle? And then the other half, you hear it from the edge, which then you're probably only hearing the echo. Nevertheless, it's okay because it's half-half. Miksat tikia kodem she'aleh amud ha-shachar, miksat tikia lachar she'amud ha-shachar lo yasa. However, another case of half-half, the mitzvah of shofar is only applicable during the day. You can hear shofar all night long, and you still won't fulfill your mitzvah. So if you heard, if someone started blowing the shofar before dawn, and then is continuing, he keeps blowing it even into dawn when it begins. So even though he heard the shofar went after dawn, but because the beginning of it was beforehand, no good. And so we see two laws that seem to contradict each other, right? How come if you hear part of it in the cistern and part outside, it's okay, but part before dawn and part after dawn, it's not okay? That's the next question of a student. What's the reason that before dawn is no good? Well, it must be because you believe that the entire blast has to be at a time when you are obligated. And here, half the blast is before the time of that obligation started. So then, if that's your principle, then in the case of the sister, the pit also, since for half of it, you were not in the pit, and only half of it you were, so it's an equivalent case. So why are you making a distinction between the two? And we answer Abaye's question. Regarding before dawn, there's no obligation at all. This is zero. It's like you did nothing. However, regarding the pit, for those who are in the pit, that's a place that's fine. They can fulfill their obligation. So therefore, that shofar blast is an official, legitimate shofar blast. The only problem is you didn't hear the whole thing. Well, that's a much less of a problem. Since you heard half of it and clearly, and the other half, you only heard the echo, but nevertheless, it was a legitimate shofar blast. So then that's sufficient that you only heard half. It's much better than the other one where it's nighttime for half of it, which that shofar blast is considered zero. Like it's not useful for anyone. Okay. Now, so that explains it. But now we can derive an added item that shamash sof tikia belot tichilat tikia yasa. According to Rabba, he would seem to agree that you only have to hear half of a blast. If you hear only the end and not the beginning, it's okay. And therefore, mimela tichilat tikia belot sof tikia yasa. And then it would be the flip side would be also true that if you heard the beginning and not the end, also you fulfilled your obligation, right? This could happen easily if you either were outside the pit and then jumped in for the second half and then you heard it clearly, or you were in the pit and heard it clearly and then jumped out of the pit and only heard the echo. And so either way, Rabba would say it's fine. You only have to hear half of it as long as the rest of it was sounded in a legitimate way. However, we already brought this up yesterday, and so we're going to be repeat a little bit of that discussion from yesterday's daf. This principle is problematic because we have a couple of challenges. Tashemata kabi dishona mashal b'sheni akishtayim en biado ela achat ve'amai tislak la betarte. We have a beraita that says you have tikiah tidu atikiah. So the first tikiah, you blew it for 5 seconds. Then the tikiah tiruah. The next tikiah, you blow it for 10 seconds, double. And you have your goal is that second tikiah, the first 5 seconds will be for that tikiah, and the next 5 seconds will be for the next set of three, right? For the first tikiah of the second set. And so this Baraita says, no, it only counts as one. And here's our question. Since you just said, I don't have to hear the whole thing. I don't have to hear the beginning if I hear the end. I don't have to hear the end if I heard the beginning. So this 10 seconds, why don't I consider the first 5 seconds to be the concluding tikiah of the first set, even though I don't hear the end, but that's okay. And then the next 5 seconds to be the first tikiah of the second set, even though I didn't hear the beginning of it, so fine, I only heard the end, so it should be okay. And but we answer, no, that we can answer that easy. Pesuke tikiata mehadadeh la paskinan. It's true, you don't have to hear the entire 5 seconds of a tikiah, but you can't split something in the middle, right? There's no splicing tool in this program here. So there has to be an actual break, but from the shofar blower, he has to stop blowing and start again in order for it to be considered two different sounds. Okay, and now next challenge to this assumption here that you only have to hear half. Tashema toke l'tocha borel tocha dut l'tocha pitas. Im kol shofar shama yasav, im kol avara shama lo yasav. Amai lepuk b'tchilat tikiyam v'kamed li arbeb kala. But back to the case of the Mishnah, which said that if you blow into a cistern or a jug, it's if you heard the actual sound, it's fine, but not if you heard an echo. But wait, why not? Since no matter what, the first second of sound is going to be the actual sound. Echo follows the real sound. So I should be able to fulfill my mitzvah just from that first initial hearing of the real sound. And even if later it gets mixed up with the echo, fine, but I heard part of it, so it should be okay. So this is a serious challenge. So instead, we have to reinterpret what Abba's statement that we started with. We're talking not about a person, about all the way up here. When we said here that someone who hears part of it inside and outside, we're not talking about a listener or the blower himself, that the blower himself started off in the board. And then he keeps blowing. While he's blowing, he climbs out of the board until he's out. That's fine, because since the shofar is always with him, when he's in the board, he hears the sound. When he's out of the board, he hears the sound. And that's what it's talking about. That's the case when it's permitted. Okay, this is obviously quite difficult to put into the words of Rabbah's statement, but since we challenged the assumptions that would derive from taking him literally, so this must be what he meant. Okay, here's the problem now. Now that we changed it to the shofar blower himself leaving it, then he's not really telling us any chidush. Like, why would anyone think this could be a problem? Oh, because you would have thought as follows. He starts off blowing the shofar in the pit. And now as he's leaving, let's say, you know, it's one of those long shofars, as he's leaving, so maybe his head, his ears exit the pit while the end of the shofar is still lower down in the pit. He's holding it down. And in that, for that time period, the sound will be going in the pit and he's only hearing the echo because he's already out of the pit. And so maybe you think that for that little bit of time, it's a problem. So therefore he teaches, no, since you're with the shofar, it doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about that little bit of time. Okay, so that concludes part A. Now, part B is using a shofar of a sacrificial animal, which you're not allowed to use for your own purpose. So here we go. We have an interesting distinction. Amar Rab Yehuda, b'shofar shel ola lo yitka, v'im taka yasa. If you have an animal that's an ola, and you take its horn and you blow it. So you're not allowed to get any benefit from a korban ola. So therefore, you're not allowed to do it. But if you did it, then b'di'avad, you fulfilled your obligation. Regarding a shelamim, you're also not allowed to use an animal of shelamim. So therefore, don't take its horn and blow it for shofar. But if you did, it's no good. B'di'avad is no good. So this is interesting. What's the difference between ola and shelamim? So let's see, my ta'ama, we're going to see a fundamental difference. Ola bat me'ailahi, kevan de ma'alba, nafkala lecholin, shelamim, de la bene me'ailanin hu, isurahu de rache behu, vela nafik, nafki lecholin. It's different. Ola is more stringent, actually, and it's called, if someone derives personal benefit from something that is an ola, and a sacrifice that's entirely burned, they violate me'aila, which is mitabi de shamayim, and you have to bring a korban, and you have to pay for what you took plus a fifth. Nevertheless, even though you went through all that terrible transgression, the item itself, in this case, the shofar, becomes yours. So it's true, you should not have taken the shofar and blown it, because by blowing something that is a korban ola, you are violating me'ila. Nevertheless, now that you used it, it does become your property. Since it's your property, so you fulfilled your mitzvah properly. However, shelamim, which is lower level, if someone takes from shelamim, it's a violation, but not as serious as me'ila. So therefore, he violated. As he's blowing the shofar, he's committing a violation, but it doesn't become his property. So therefore, the entire time, it's not his. And that would be a problem, according to the Ritva, it's a problem of mitzvah haba'a ba'avera. You're doing a mitzvah, but with the mitzvah, you're doing an aved, you're doing a sin through the act of doing the mitzvah. And that's a general rule that if you're at the same time violating something, it's no good. Now, it's true, in the case of Ola, you also violated a sin, but you already did that. And so now you can benefit from it. Like, you know, you break something in a store, you break it, you bought it. Okay, I bought it already, so now I can take it. Whereas if I do something less, you know, I only scratch something in a store, so I didn't buy it. So then I can't just go and take it. Okay, so that's the explanation of Rav Yehuda's statement. Now, challenge. Matkif la rava emat ma'al. At what point do you commit me'ila? Only at the end of the blowing, right? As you blow, right? It's not that I took it and used it for something else and then I blew it. It's the very act of blowing causes the problem. Well, ki kataka, well, as I'm blowing, then even in the case of ola, as I'm blowing, it's prohibited. In other words, it's not like I committed me'ila before and now it's mine. It's still a mitzvah ba'avera, even in the case of ola, because as I'm blowing, I am committing me'ila. So then what's the difference? Okay, good question. Ela amar Rava, echad ze ve'echad ze lo yasa. So Rava disagrees with Rav Yehuda, who said the original statement. And he says, no, in both cases, ola and shelamim, lo yatsa, you do not fulfill your obligation. Both of them, as you're blowing, you are taking something that's sacrificial, violating a mitzvah. Both of them are mitzvah haba'a ba'avera. So that's what Rava first thought. But then he thought about it more and he changed his mind. The opposite. Hadar amar echad ze v'echad ze yasa. Misfot lav lehanot nitenu. In both cases, you fulfill your obligation. Why? Because when you perform a mitzvah, you're not doing it for your personal benefit. Misfot are not given for your benefit. So even if, you know, you happen to enjoy, you like eating masa, right? It doesn't matter. Because you like hearing the sound of the shofar. It's a beautiful sound. You're playing a tune on it. And that doesn't matter. Misfot are not for our physical enjoyment. They're there for spiritual benefit. And spiritual benefit is not monetary, is not tangible. Therefore, when someone takes a shofar and blows it, a shofar of a sacrificial animal, they are not using it for their own purpose. And therefore, he does not commit me'ila or any sin. And therefore, it's okay. You fulfilled your obligation. You're not committing an avera because you didn't derive benefit from it. You derived the benefit of a mitzvah, but that's not a personal physical benefit. It's a spiritual benefit. Okay, so that's really fascinating. Now we're going to get back to that concept, but first, Rav Yehuda, who we saw started this discussion, he has another law. B'shofar shel avodah zarah lo yitkavim taka yasa. If you have a shofar of an animal that was used for idol worship, you shouldn't use it because you shouldn't derive any benefit from something that's idolatry. However, if you did, you fulfilled your obligation. Now, why don't we say mitzvah b'avera here? The Gemara does not explain it seems to be a contradiction between the previous case. The Gemara does not explain it. The Rishonim discuss it. However, if it's an ir hanidachat, if it's a city that the whole city was went and did avodah zarah, then this entire city is banned. We have to go and destroy the entire city, burn everything. Now, my tama, what's the difference between these two cases? Ir hanidachat kitute mikatat shi'oreh. In the case of ir hanidachat, because it's banned and it has to all be destroyed, everything in it. Therefore, this shofar, even if it's right now intact, because it has a sentence on it that it must be burnt, so we consider it already as if it's already burnt. And therefore, if you would burn it, it would just turn into ashes. And the ashes do not have enough of a required size. We saw yesterday that a shofar has to be, at least be able to have a tefach that you can hold it, plus so extend on both sides. And so that's the problem, that you don't have a shiur that's big enough because we consider it as if it's already burnt. That's true of ir hanidachat. It's not true of just regular idolatry, an idolatrous item. You can't use it, you can't benefit from it, but you don't have to burn it. And that would explain the difference. Okay. Now, amadava, hamudar hana'a mechavera mutal litkoa lo, tikia'a shel mitzvah. Hamudar hana'a mishofar mutal litkoa bo, tikia'a shel mitzvah. Because Rava, we just established here, he's the one that said, mitzvot lav lehanot nitnu. Mitzvot are not for any personal benefit. So therefore, that would have an application to a vow. If someone makes a vow that I will not derive any benefit from you, I got into a fight with you and say, I'm not coming to your house anymore, right? I'm not going to take a lift with you. I'm not accepting any presents from you. No benefit from you. Nevertheless, that person can blow shofar for him because mitzvot lav lehanot nitnu. Mitzvah is not a tangible physical benefit. So even though I'm not allowed to accept any physical benefit from you, I can hear your shofar blowing or use your shofar, and that's fine. And similarly, mudar hanami shofar mutalit koabot kesha mitzvah. If I make a vow and they say, I will derive no benefit from this shofar, I'm upset at the shofar, right? Whatever it is. So I can't use the shofar to hold liquid or for anything else, but I can blow it for a mitzvah because I am not deriving physical benefit from it. Therefore, that's another application that mitzvot are only for spiritual benefit. Another application. Someone said, I'm not going to derive any benefit from his friend. So his friend can nevertheless sprinkle, let's say he's a Kohen, and the guy who made the vow was Tameh Lamet. So he can go in and sprinkle upon him the Para Aduma. So even though that's a benefit, and he said, I'm not going to derive any benefit from this Kohen, it doesn't matter because this is a mitzvah, and mitzvot are not for physical benefit. So the fact that now he became from Tahor, became Tahor, that's nice, and he fulfilled the mitzvah. That's also nice. It's okay. That doesn't violate the vow. That's only true in the winter time during the rain season. But in the summertime, that's a problem because in the summertime he's getting two benefits. Number one, the mitzvah, and number two, because it's hot out, and now he has this water sprinkled on him. He says, "Oh, this water feels so refreshing on this hot day." That is physical benefit. So since it comes along with some physical benefit, there in that case, it would violate the vow if he accepted it. if he got the water sprinkled on him. Similar case was the opposite. Hamudad hana'am mima'ayan, tobel bo tebila shel mitzvah bimot ha'geshamim, aval lo bimot ha'chama. Someone makes a vow, I am not going to derive any benefit from this spring, this water spring. Nevertheless, he's permitted to go and dunk as a mikveh, use it as a mikveh during the winter time, because even though he's, you know, he's bathing and even though he's fulfilling a mitzvah, that's fine, because fulfilling a mitzvah is not a physical benefit, and so it's okay. But if it's summertime and it's so hot out and he goes into the spring, even though he's going into it for a mikveh, he's also deriving physical benefit because he feels nice and refreshed. And so that would violate the vow. Okay, and that is the end of part two. And so now we get to the third and longest part of the sugya. And this is this case. Shelchu le'avu d'Shmuel. So it's a messenger from Eretz Yisrael to Shmuel's father. We saw one of these messengers yesterday also. There's a lot of interconnections between all these sugyot. And he says, Kifa'o v'achal masa yasa. Let's say it's Pesach, and person sitting there Pesach night, and someone comes and forces him to eat matzah, right? He stuffs it down his throat, puts a gun to his head, eat this matzah or else. So now the person does it, he eats it, he fulfilled his obligation, even though he was forced to do it. Okay, that's interesting. Now, kefa'o man. Now we have to clarify this case. Who exactly forced him? Ilema kefa'o shed. If you say it's a demon that forced him, okay, saying a demon forced him is a way of saying that he went through some temporary insanity. Something possessed him, and you know he had no idea that he was doing a mitzvah. He was doing it just in the way that was out of his mind. Well, if that's the case, we have a braita that teaches if someone is sometimes insane, sometimes sane, and sometimes insane. Right? He's like a manic depressive. He goes through different stages. So when he is okay, when he feels good, then he's obligated all the mitzvot, like anyone else who's sane. When the person is going through an insane episode, then he is like an insane person for all things. In other words, he is not obligated in mitzvot. And therefore, if this person, he goes into some temporary insanity and he eats this matzah, not knowing what he's doing, well, you don't have to say yetzah that he fulfilled obligation because he's not obligated at all. Right, like anyone who is a shote, so can't be talking about that case. No, we're talking about a case when the Persians compel him to eat. Right, some it's like the opposite of a pogrom. Right, the Persians say you must do this. It's true, actually, the Persians did authorize Ezra and Nehemiah to force the Jews to fulfill mitzvot, to follow the law of the land, which was the Torah. So. Okay, however the case came out to be, the point is that he's being forced by another person to do it, but he's not doing it willingly, and he's not doing it in order to fulfill the mitzvah. He doesn't want to fulfill the mitzvah, and now they're forcing him to do it. Nevertheless, he fulfills it. So that's very interesting. Now, Amar Rava zot omeret hatokea lashir, yasa Rava, he says a lot of things today. So he derives a secondary point that according to this, someone who blows shofar as a musical instrument on Rosh Hashanah. I feel like playing a happy birthday on the shofar. It's my friend's birthday. And so he blows it, not having any idea that he's fulfilling a mitzvah. Nevertheless, he fulfills it. Why? What's the point? It's the same thing. Just like someone who is eating matzah because someone forced him to eat matzah, having no idea that there is a mitzvah, or he knows there is a mitzvah and doesn't care. He's not doing it for that purpose. He fulfills it. So too, blowing the shofar, not thinking that I'm using this for my mitzvah. Nevertheless, he's just playing an instrument. You fulfill it, right? It's just the physical act. Okay, according to that. Now, pishita, isn't this obvious what Rava said, that this would be the same thing? Hainu hach, these are the same case. Why does he have to tell me, oh, this also applies to another case? This point, we got the point already from one case. Ma'udetema hatam echol masa amarachamana, veha achil. Because I would have thought that regarding matzah, the Torah says, eat matzah. There, it's a physical act, and he ate it, right? So it doesn't matter if I had intention to do it or didn't have intention to do it. I did the act, and the act is done, and so I fulfilled it. Aval hacha, zichron teruah ketiv, v'hai mitasek ba'al mahu. Regarding shofar, it's more than the physical act. Zichron means there's a remembrance. I have to think about the meaning of the shofar. I have to remind myself of the shofar's meaning. And otherwise, I don't fulfill it. This is like the mitzvah of prayer. If you're just mumbling the words without having any idea what you're saying, then pretty much you don't fulfill the mitzvah, at least for some section of the tefillah. And so it's built into the meaning, built into the fulfillment, is that you have to know what you're doing. Hakamash malan. So now that's why Rav came to teach us. Now, shofar is the same thing also. Shofar is like matzah. You just have to do the act, right? I mean, of course, obviously it's better if you're having intention and it's inspiring you and all that, but just bottom level, did you fulfill your obligation? Do you have to do it again? You fulfilled your obligation. Okay. Alma kasabarava misvot. And srichot kavana. So here we go. According to this, Rava says, in order to fulfill a mitzvah, you do not require intent. So this is a huge machloket, and here we're only focusing on Rava's opinion that you don't have to know that you're doing a mitzvah when you're doing it. This is like, you know, in some cartoons, you know, that the guy is walking and he helps people without knowing, like Curious George, right? You know, he helps a lot, even though he was trying to be naughty, but he ends up saving the day. All right, didn't have intention. Nevertheless, we give him credit for it. Okay, let's have deal. But that's the idea, right? It's just the act being done, not even though you don't know you're doing it, it's still okay. All right, so now, based on this, we're going to have the long discussion, and we're going to challenge Rava's statement that mitzvot do not require intention, and from four different sources. The first three are going to be pretty straightforward regarding reading Shema, hearing shofar outside the synagogue, and the intent of the shofar blower. So let's look at those first. Itibe. Haya kore batorah v'gia zeman ha-mikra. Im kiven libo yasav im lav. Lo yasa. If someone was reading Torah, right? He opened the Chumash and he's reading it, and he's opened the Sefer Torah and he's reading it. And Chumash. He's reading Chumash. And he happens to be reading the section of Kiryat Shema in Devarim. And it turns out that it was time, right? The sun rose and it was time that he had to say Shema. If he had intention to fulfill his obligation to say Shema, he fulfilled it. If not, he does not fulfill it. So what do you see here? Even though he was sitting and he happened to be Parashat HaShavua, and he's reading it anyway. So he read Shema, but he didn't have intention to fulfill his obligation to Shema, of Kirat Shema. He does not fulfill his obligation. According to that, can't we learn that you do require intention? And that would be a challenge to Rav. We answer, my love, kiven. So this is the question. My love, kiven li bo la set. When he says he has intention, doesn't it mean he has intention to fulfill the mitzvah? Rava can answer, lo likrot. He has intention to read. Now, what does that mean? Likrot hakakade. He's reading. What do you mean? Why do I have to have intention to read if I'm reading? Oh, we're talking about a case, bekore lehagia. Maybe he is reading a scroll to correct it. You know, if you ever did any copy editing or typesetting, right, and you're checking a text, for spelling or for formatting, then in that case, you're not really reading the words. I mean, you're looking at every letter. It's true. You're looking at every word. You're just kind of looking at it, not reading it. And, you know, you can copy edit an entire manuscript and have no idea what it says. And so this is a really interesting distinction between looking at words and the act of reading, which does imply some kind of understanding of what you're saying, it's a different kind of processing. And so therefore that's what's talking about a case. You have to have at least intention that I am sitting here and reading, even if I don't have intention that I'm fulfilling my obligation of Kirat Shema, nevertheless, you fulfill your obligation. And so that's how Rav can explain that one. Okay, challenge number two, Tashema. Haya over achore bet ha-kneset, o she ha-bet to samuch le-bet ha-kneset, v'shama kol shofar o kol megillah. Im kiven libo yasa, v'im lav lo yasa. This is our Mishnah. And right here in the Masechet Rosh Hashanah says, if someone happened to be passing by the Bet Knesset, or he lives nearby, and he opens the window, and he's hearing the sound of the shofar, or someone reading Megillat Esther, if he has intentions, says, oh, shofar, I'm going to fulfill my mitzvah by listening to this. That's okay. If not, no, then he doesn't. My love him kiven li boy laset. So what does it mean him kiven li if he has intention? Intention for what? Doesn't it mean, obviously, intention to fulfill the mitzvah, right? And therefore, you see, you need intention to fulfill the mitzvah against Rava, who says you don't. This is the end we answer. Lo lishmoa. He has intention to listen. Lishmoa av hashama. What does it mean, intention to listen? If I'm listening, why do I need intention to listen? I'm already listening. The answer is savur hamor ba'almahu. When I hear the sound, I hear some, I don't know what kind of shofar blower it is, right? But not a very good one. It sounds like a donkey braying. I just hear this strange sound, and I don't even know that I'm listening, hearing a shofar. It's just some background weird noise. And so in that case, that's too low level. I don't fulfill the obligation. However, if I hear the shofar, I say, oh, someone is playing shofar. That's enough. Even if I don't have in mind that I'm fulfilling my mitzvah of hearing shofar, nevertheless, as long as I know that I'm listening to something, to a shofar, that's sufficient, and that's how Rava could answer it. Good. Now, challenge number three. Itibe. Nitkaven shomeya, velo nitkaven mashmiya. Mashmiya, velo nitkaven shomeya. Lo yasa ad shitkaven shomeya umashmiya. This is halacha. We know that both the person blowing the shofar and the person listening have to have intent. If one or the other doesn't have, then it's no good. That's why we often announce on Rosh Hashanah, right? Whoever's blowing shofar will have intention to fulfill your obligation, and you, the listener, should have intention to have your obligation, to fulfill your obligation by listening. So now, this is two cases built in here. How could it be that the shofar blower has intention but not the listener? Well, the listener may not have intention because, as we just said, he thinks it's just an animal braying. He doesn't even know, braying. No, he doesn't even think it's a shofar. But how can we have a case where the listener has intention, but the blower doesn't have intention? So it must be, what do you mean he doesn't have intention? Okay, he could be that he doesn't have intention to fulfill the mitzvah. Maybe he's just playing happy birthday on the shofar. So then that would be a case. And here, this statement says that he has, it's no good if he has only that. He has to have intention to actually fulfill the mitzvah. So this is a challenge, right? Doesn't this show that you have to have intention to fulfill the mitzvah? And we say, no, Dilma de kam in the bach nabuche. Maybe the shofar blower also is not intending to play the shofar. He's just blowing bark-like sounds in it. It'd be the difference between playing a piano and banging on the piano, right? Banging, it does make some sound, but it's not even, it's not intending to play it. He's just, he happens to be leaning on it. And so same, something similar to that with the shofar is like, what is this thing? And he just starts blowing in it to see what it does, but that's not playing. So he has to have at least intention to play the shofar and make sounds with it. Even if he does not even have intention to fulfill the mitzvah, that would still be okay, according to Rava. Okay. Amar le Abaye, ele me'ata hayashin bashimini basuka, yilke. And now we get to the long section here and the final challenge. And this challenge is from the opposite direction. It's regarding Baal Tosif, right? There's many cases where the Torah says you can't take away mitzvot and you can't even add to mitzvot. You're not allowed to decide, my tefillin has four parshiot. I want to add. I have a couple of other favorite sections. I want to add Aseret Dibrot. I want to add Bereshit, right? I want to add more to my tefillin. That's no good. It violates Baal Tosif. Okay, another case of Baal Tosif is if someone would sit in the sukkah on Shemini Aseret. There's no mitzvah on Shemini Aseret to sit in the sukkah. Let's talk about, just keep it simple. Talk about in Israel. There's one day of your Shemini Aseret, and we know the day. Someone says, I'm going to go and sleep in the sukkah. Well, that could be a problem of Baal Tosif. But the thing is, that's only if I have intention, right? What if I don't have it? I just fell asleep in the sukkah. So then, according to Rava, since mitzvot do not require intention, so I don't have to have intention. I'm going in the mitzvah to fulfill I'm going into the sukkah to fulfill a mitzvah. Even if I have no intention, right? I just happen to, look, it's nice out over here, and I fall asleep in the sukkah. I will have fulfilled a mitzvah, tried to fulfill a mitzvah, and thereby violated Baal Tosif, because I'm not allowed to fulfill a mitzvah on Shemini Aseret. So you see this, we're challenging it kind of from the opposite direction, not cases where I'm trying, where I have to fulfill a mitzvah, but this case where I'm not allowed to fulfill a mitzvah. And so in that case, what is a kula here with leniency here becomes a stringency. In this case, if you say you need intention, well, then you're okay. I didn't have intention to fulfill my mitzvah and going to sukkah, so you're okay. But according to Rava, because you don't need to have intention and fulfill it anyway, so now you potentially fulfill the mitzvah on Shemini Aseret, but by doing that, you're over Baal Tosif. And that is the challenge. So we're going to see a whole series. The red means a question. The green means an answer. We'll come back to this as we go along. Okay. So Abaye's question is, according to you, if someone happened to fall asleep in on Shemini Aseret in the sukkah, should we give him lashes because he violated Baal Tosif? I mean, that's crazy. That's not the law. We don't do that. Amar lo shani omer misvot eno over alehen ela bizmanan. So Rava says, no, I only apply that you don't need to have intention if it's the time period in which you can fulfill that mitzvah. But if it's outside the time period, then I would not say so, right? I say that you do not transgress adding to mitzvot except in the time period where that mitzvah is applicable. So for example, tefillin, right? If I would go and add another section of Torah in my tefillin and wear it during the day, then I'm violating Baal Tosif. But let's say I would wear it at night. At night is not a time of wearing tefillin. There's no mitzvah to wear tefillin at night. And so if I would go and bind, the Ten Commandments or a Bereshit on my arm at night, I would not violate Baal Tosif because the time, it's not the time period at all, doesn't even apply. And therefore, the same thing here with Shemini Aseret. That's not the time of Sukkot. There is no obligation to fulfill a mitzvah at all. So you can't add when it's not the time period. You can only, it's only by adding, doing another item, adding another sisit, putting 5 sisit, right, during a time period when I would otherwise be obligated. Adding on Sukkot, if I would take, instead of 4 minim, I would also take a few other items, take an apple and a gourd and shake them all together. That would be no good because I'm adding during the time. But if I would do it any other time of the year, take the 4 minim plus 2 and shake them, that's okay because it's not on Sukkot. So I'm not doing anything at all. And that's how we could explain it. Okay, but now we're going to ask a question on that, because here we have another case of Baal Tosif, and it seems to be outside the time, and nevertheless is forbidden. So let's see. Mativ Rav Shemen Bar Abba. Remember his name. He's one challenging from the case of Birkat Kohanim. Minayin lekohen sholeh leduchan shelo yomar ho'il v'natna li Torah reshut levarech et Yisrael osif beracha achat misheli. What if a Kohen says, Torah gave me permission to bless Israel, right? Kote barachut b'nei Yisrael, amor lehem. So Kohanim have this special right and obligation. So now he says, besides Birkat Kohanim, I want to add my own beracha. While I'm up there blessing, I'm going to add another statement. Kegon, Hashem Elokei Avotechem Yosef Alechem. He goes and adds more, right? Hashem, the God of your forefathers, should increase you. Or something else, whatever he wants to add. That would be adding. The Torah only authorized the Kohanim to say Birkat Kohanim, not to give any blessing that they want. During the time of Birkat Kohanim. Now, here won't be the case. It means he said, right? V'yasem lecha shalom. He finished Birkat Kohanim. Now, once he finished Birkat Kohanim, that's it. It's over, right? So the obligation, the time of the obligation has finished. And then he's adding another pasuk on his own. So then what you see here, and nevertheless, it's called Baal Tosif. So therefore, Baal Tosif can apply even outside the time of obligation. According to this, that would mean that, you know, even let's say on any other time, not during prayer, a Kohen gives someone a blessing, like maybe their sandak or something. It could be a problem, according to this, of Baal Tosif, right? Because you are violating. So this is a challenge to Davah because, that's not the halakha. This is a challenge to Davah because the Davah said, if it's outside the time, then there's no problem of Baal Tosif. Over here, you're outside the time, and nevertheless, there is a problem of Baal Tosif. So, no, maybe we're talking about where he didn't finish. He didn't say, V'yasem lecha shalom, right in the middle of Birkat Kohanim, Baruch Hashem Mishmerecha, and then he adds, and also Hashem should send you, much health and good things. No, that's what it's talking about. And it's when it's in the middle. That's why. So I could answer that. V'atanya siyem, we have another braita parallel to this one that says he finished. Well, siyem berachachad, maybe that means he finished the first blessing. And then, but between that and the second blessing, before he says ya'er, that's what he wants to say. Then he adds his beracha. No, you can't say that either because that braita says v'atanya siyem kol birchotav. Right, so we don't have this full beraita, but it said if he finishes all the berachot of Birkat Kohanim and then adds on his own, he would violate Baal Tosif. So what do you say to that? Shanecha, Rava could answer. Kevan deilu mitrame le sibora harina hadar mevarech kule yomazim nehu. Well, it's still the time period because let's say that Kohen finished praying with this minyan. But then he's hanging around and another next minyan comes in. And now they're up to Birkat Kohanim. The Kohen can go ahead and join Birkat Kohanim so he can fulfill the mitzvah again and again, all day long, if there's minyanim that are going on. And so therefore, the whole day is considered the time period of Birkat Kohanim, not only those that few minutes when you're actually saying Birkat Kohanim. And therefore, yes, it is in fact all day long. And so all day long, he has this prohibition that he can say Birkat Kohanim, but he can't add more verses, more blessings to Birkat Kohanim. But it is in fact part of the time, and that's why it doesn't challenge Rava, because the time of Birkat Kohanim is all day long. Okay. Good. So that now we have an answer. Let's look at the outline. We challenged Rabbi Rava said mitzvot do not require intention. We challenged him. So if you have no intention to fulfill your mitzvah on Shmini Aseret and you happen to fall asleep, then you're going to lash the guy. So what about that? He says no. That's outside the time of obligation. And Rava says I don't have Baal Tosif outside the time of obligation. We asked. From Rav Shemin asks him, yeah, but Birkat Kohanim is outside the time of obligation because you finish Birkat Kohanim. And nevertheless, it says, this Baraita says you violate Baal Tosif. He says, no, if that I'm allowed to bless the Kohen, has an obligation to bless all day long, potentially, if there's another minyan. And therefore, it is considered inside the time. And now we're going to bring a proof that something that you could potentially fulfill anytime during the day is within the time period from sprinkling of blood. So we're just adding a proof to this answer. This proof is a bit long. So just keep in mind what we're trying to do. Uminat Timra. How do you know that a mitzvah that can't be performed again extends the time of the obligation and the whole day will be the time of obligation? Itnan, this is a long Mishnah in Masechet Zevachim. Hanitanim b'matana achat, shintarbu benitanim b'matana achat, yitanu b'matana achat. A case of bloods, different kinds of blood that get mixed up. So some blood, like for a bechor, you have to take that blood and sprinkle it on the mizbeach only once. That's it, one sprinkling. So if you have a blood of this firstborn plus some other sacrifice that also has to be sprinkled one time, and by mistake, they get mixed up together, it's okay because all of them only have to be sprinkled once, so you sprinkle them all once. Now, matan arba b'matan arba yinatenu b'matan arba. If something like an olah is offered, and has to be offered four times. When we say four times, it's actually referring to two corners, right? You put on one corner and that's two walls. And then you go around, the coin would go around to the other side and put on the other corner, and that would be two walls. So that's called four sprinklings. So if this item, all right, korban ola, animal, gets mixed up with another blood of another korban ola or something else that requires four times, no problem. So even though it's mixed up, you take the mixture, you take from the mixture and sprinkle it four times. So that those are easy cases. But now here's the hard case. Matan al babe, matan achat. What if some blood from a bechor gets mixed up with blood from an ola? So now within this mixture, some of it has to be sprinkled four times and some of it has to be sprinkled one time. And you don't want to add, but you also don't want to take away. What do you do? Machloket. Rabbi Eliezer omer yinatzenu b'matan arba. Then take it and sprinkle it four times, right? And go extra. Rabbi Yoshua omer yinatzenu b'matan achat. Only do it one time. Be careful, right? Don't do as much. Now we'd have a conversation or to argue it out. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Hadover al Bal Tigra. Rabbi Eliezer says you should do it four times, because if I do it only once, I may be violating, don't diminish from the mitzvot, right? So I'm not allowed. Rabbi Yoshua says the opposite. You say do it four times, but I say only do it once. You know why I say that? Because I'm not allowed to add. And so within this, there's some blood that can only be, should only be done once. And you're going to do it four times. That would be adding. So there's a, right, you're stuck here between a rock and a hard place. So Rabbi Eliezer responds to that. I think that you should do it four times, because the prohibition of adding is only when the blood is by itself, the blood of a bechor by itself. Don't do it four times, and I'll have to do. But here it's mixed up with the other blood. So it's clear that I am sprinkling this drop of blood, right? Because it within it, that part of it has to be done four times. And the one that has to be only done once is coming along for the ride. So it's no problem about Tosif. And so Amar lo b'ri Yeshua, lo nemar bal tigra, ela keshu batzmo. I'll say the same thing the other way around, that diminishing, doing less is only if it's by itself. If I have blood by itself, it has to be four times. Don't do it once, I'm diminishing. But if it's mixed up with other blood, it has to be done only once. So then it's clear, I can't do it. The other part can only be done once. So that's why I'm prohibited to do it. And so it's not a violation of Baal Tigra. All right, so then we're at a standstill. But now we break the standstill. Ve'od amar bi Yoshua, kishelo natata avarta bal tigra ve'lo asita ma'ase bi'adecha. Kishenatata avarta bal tosif asita ma'ase bi'adecha. If you don't do anything, you just give it once and then stop. So yeah, maybe I violated diminishing, because within it, there's part of it I have to do four times, but I didn't do it actively. I'm passive. I just stopped doing it. According to you, Rabbi Eliezer, they say four times. Now you are doing something active. You are violating Baal Tosif with your hands. In other words, if you're not sure, just be passive and let it go. And, you know, I don't know what to do. This is, you know, like in the trolley problem. This is three people here, four kids here, two pregnant women there. What do you do? You just be passive and let things happen. Because anytime you're going to do something, then you're responsible for that. And so that's a worse violation. Okay, now what's our point here? Why do we bring all this? Since in this case, the blood that is sprinkled once is a bechor animal. And once you sprinkle it one time, that's it. The obligation is finished. And so the time period for the obligation has ended. And nevertheless, the discussion says, oh, if I would take that one drop, the drop, and I already did it once, and now do it four times, it's really one more time, if I do it again, then that would be a problem about Tosif. So what you see here is that there is such a thing as Baal Tosif, even though the time period has ended. Why? La mishum damrinan kevan de ilu mitramele buchra harina hadar maze mine kule yomazimne. It must be that this Mishnah is assuming that since it's true that once you sprinkle one drop, you completed your obligation for this bechor, And nevertheless, there might be another bechor that someone brings to the Beit HaMikdash an hour from now. And then the Kohanim will have to bring the sprinkle blood from that one. So even though it's another animal, nevertheless, it's the same mitzvah. So therefore, the entire day is considered the time period for the obligation of sprinkling blood of bechor. And therefore, even though I finished and I sprinkled one time this bechor's blood, if I would do it again, it's still this called the time period of sprinkling of blood. And this is now parallel to the case of Birkat Kohanim. Even though this Kohen fulfilled his obligation and he said Birkat Kohanim in his minyan, and nevertheless, he might find another minyan, and then he would go and say Birkat Kohanim again, and therefore the entire day is considered the time period of Birkat Kohanim. So even if he said the last word, V'yasim lecha shalom, he still may not add any words of beracha. So all that was simply a proof for this answer that something that can be done multiple times during the day, the entire day is considered that time period. So that was a proof. Now we're going to ask a question. You really can't bring that as a proof because we don't know that that's the reason why Rabbi Yoshua said that. When Rabbi Yoshua here says, oh, you had a problem of Baal Tosif, maybe he thinks that there's a problem of Baal Tosif even outside the time. It doesn't necessarily mean that he assumed, oh, because you might bring another one later in the day. Maybe he thinks any time of year, if you wear tefillin at night with extra parshiot, then there's a problem, right? We don't know that that's the reason. So you can't really bring it as a proof for what you're saying. The source itself is quite ambiguous. This is okay. You know, you're right. Well, when we brought that Mishnah, long Mishnah, we brought it actually for a slightly different reason. We brought it to explain Rav Shemin. Anan hachi kamdinan. Rav Shemin bar Abba. My tama shebek matitinu motimi mebaraita. What we brought it for is to explain how come Rav Shemin, he's the one that asked the question from Birkat Kohanim, but that's a braita. If you have a question, you should ask your strongest question. It's much stronger to ask it from a Mishnah. Why did he leave the Mishnah, this one about sprinkling blood, and ask it, since you ask a question here also, because you're over Baal Tosif, and even though you fulfilled your mitzvah, so why didn't he ask it from here rather than the Mishnah? Lotimi matitin maitama lamotiv. So why didn't he use the Mishnah? This is what we're explaining. Since if another bechor would come, then the kohanim would be obligated to sprinkle blood from that that bechor animal also. Therefore, the entire day is obligated. So there, based on that, we are wondering, and the Braita also, since another minyan can come anytime during the day, so we consider it the whole day. So all this, we didn't bring the Mishnah as proof for this concept. We just happened to be explaining. He didn't bother asking a question from the Mishnah because the Mishnah, he's still obligated in the Bechor the whole day. And now, since we know that, we use that same principle to answer his challenge from Birkat Kohanim, because Birkat Kohanim also, another minyan can come up, just like another Bechor can come up. And so Rava is okay. But back to Rav Shemin. Rav Shemin bar Abba, what would he say to that? How could he make a distinction? He could say, Hatam la sageh de la yahiv. Hachai ba'e mevarech, iba'e la mevarech. He would say, oh, listen, I can agree with the Mishnah, because in the Mishnah, it's not possible to refrain from sprinkling again. If someone brings another bechor, the Kohanim are obligated to sprinkle the blood of that bechor. So yes, indeed, really the whole day is a time of sprinkling. But in the case of Birkat Kohanim, once the Kohen fulfills his obligation once, he doesn't have to. If he's in the other room and he's having breakfast, he's learning Torah, and there's another minyan, he doesn't have to say, oh, Birkat Kohanim, I have to run in. Right? If he wants to, he feels like it, he can, but he is not obligated. So therefore, he finished his mitzvah, he fulfilled it. That's the end of the time of obligation. And nevertheless, he said, Yasem Lecha Shalom, he may not add Pesukim. And so that's why Rav Shemin thought that the Baraita is, in fact, a better proof, a better challenge, a good challenge against Rava. And Rava, he could answer that, no, the same thing. Doesn't matter if he has to say Birkat Kohanim or doesn't have to say Birkat Kohanim. Nevertheless, he could say Birkat Kohanim again. So therefore, it is the time. And Rav Shemin will say, no, it's not the time because he doesn't have to say it. So that would be the point of controversy between them. Okay, so now we're left at that point. And so if you accept Rav Shemin's distinction, then it would be still be a problem. And so since there's some ambiguity and Rav Shemin has a point, Rava comes in and says, I have an answer for myself, right? This is interesting. We challenged, Rava said the statement, we challenged and answered for him, you know, the Stam, the anonymous Gemara was having this whole discussion. But Rava actually had his own answer that we just delayed until now. So Rava himself has an answer. Rava Amar, Laset la ba'ai kavana, la'avor ba'ai kavana. Rava says, no, there's a difference between fulfilling an obligation, like shofar and like masa. And so there, I don't have to have intention to fulfill the obligation. As long as I do it, it's okay. But regarding violating Baal Tosif, that's different. In order to violate Baal Tosif, there I do have to have intention that I am fulfilling this mitzvah for that. So there are different barriers for fulfilling an obligation rather than violating Baal Tosif. And that's why it's simple. He can explain the case of sleeping in the sukkah and Shemini Aseret, since I did not have intention to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, it's okay. So I slept in the sukkah. Do not violate Baal Tosif. So this is a much simpler answer, and we could end there. But the Gemara goes one step more and questions this. Baha matan damim l'Rabbi Yoshua de la'avor v'la ba'e kavana. Now back to that Mishnah, the long Mishnah in Zevachim, that giving extra blood, sprinkling the blood again, for according to the Yoshua, would be a problem. And there, you're not doing it with intention. You know, I sprinkle that blood. I have intention that the Korban Ola blood, yes, that, but I don't have intention to sprinkle the firstborn blood. And nevertheless, it still violates Baal Tosif. And so this would go against Rava's answer here, that to violate Baal Tosif, I do require Kavana. Here, even though I didn't require kavana, it still violates. Ela marava. Rather, we're going to rephrase what Rava said. Laset la ba'e kavana. To fill the mitzvah, you don't need kavana. Okay, that's like shofar and matzah. La'avor bizmano la ba'e kavana. To violate Baal Tosif within the time period also does not require kavana. If I just happen to pick up 4 minim plus an apple and a gourd, right, and I didn't have intention to fulfill a mitzvah, and I did it on Sukkot, I still violate Baal Tosif, right? Because if I just picked up the 4 by himself, let's say I'm picking them up just to move them somewhere else, and I have no intention to fulfill the mitzvah, I nevertheless fulfill the mitzvah. So that's principle number 2. And the third, shelo bizmano be'kavana, but not at the time of the obligation, that I do require kavana. And so since this would explain the Shemini Aseret case, that's not at the time of obligation. So I would have to have intention to fulfill my obligation in order to violate Baal Tosif. But regarding the sprinkling of the blood, since the entire day is in fact the time for sprinkling of the blood, even if I did not have intention to take this Bechor blood and sprinkle it, but I sprinkled it anyway, and nevertheless, it would violate Baal Tosif. And so this way, we rephrase the Rava to take into account that case. Okay, I think this is interesting because Rava had a good answer here. All right, there's a different barometer. By rephrasing it, we end up making Rava's final answer pretty much the same as the answer that we said before, no Baal Tosif outside the time of obligation. And so there's no longer much of a difference between the two. So we kind of homogenize these two various answers. All right, so we saw this, these very interesting principles today. Number one, a very important mitzvot are not for physical benefit. And then this the beginning of this discussion of mitzvot not requiring intention, what is in fact the minimal level of intention that one must have in order to fulfill a mitzvah. Baruch Adonai l'olam, amen v'amen.